much fun. Here, sign in. Not all this on my case because I don't have anybody signed in.
Well, let's put down Ted first.
Okay.
Tim will probably go.
It doesn't have to be in the way.
Order. The record show that Senator Ziegler, Senator Strzelczyk, and Senator Gelman are present. Our first order of business is committee substitute for Senate Bill 95, which is left over from last week. It was the direction of the committee to bring this back as soon as practicable after committee substitute had been presented. Senator Ziegler had sent this on to some of his constituents in Southeast. Those people have indicated by public opinion message they favor committee substitute, and I would ask for a motion.
So moved. Or I move that this bill be sent from committee to
committee. I certainly have no objection. I'm not changing to do it. It's okay to accommodate everybody.
So. Yeah. Everybody, nobody at the same time. Where does this bill go from here? You know?
That is its own referral.
This is the only referral. You have the bill number? Okay. The next bill that we want to hear today is House Bill 421.
My apologies. Because
it has. Oh, it does go to Hess.
Yes.
Okay. And
let's see if Donna's got that.
We do have a recommended pardon?
What about that?
Yes. Do we have the analysis ready to get out on
it? To put in the mailbox as soon as I get downstairs.
Okay.
Thursday?
Okay, we'll just say that it's scheduled for Thursday. Okay. There is a proposed committee substitute for this and for 421. And I'm not sure whether that substitute is available on the table. I know there are some people here that want to testify on 421, and I have some people from out of town, so I would ask to have a plane to catch pretty quick. John, did you want to testify? If you come forward and identify yourself and the box number or whatever.
Can we sit right here?
Yeah, that's fine. We'll pick it up.
My name is John Davis. I'm in the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. And I'm at box 854, Route 2, sold out in Alaska, 99669. I just picked up a draft of your committee substitute for House Bill 421. And I would like to say we at in the Kenai Peninsula Borough are really pleased that you're working on this and hope you can come up with something on this year. For many years, we've been wanting to give our taxpayers some relief without virtually destroying our tax base. And it seems like you're headed in the right direction. We would like to make some comments. Number one on the real, on 421, which relates to the real residential property, we favor the decision and the direction in which you're heading to leave it up to local government and their voters. Number two, we favor unlimited exemption that might be adopted by local government bodies. Or if that wouldn't be palatable to your members, we would favor at least a $100,000 exemption on real residential property. Number three, we would favor local governments being given an unlimited thing that I mentioned there, and that they could choose the amount. So in other words, if you had the $100,000 exemption, the government body could choose exactly what would fit their needs in an amount, whether it be $10,000 as it is now or on up to the maximum $100,000. On the additions, which is in this committee substitute on personal property, we're really glad to see you starting to do something about that. We've been real puzzled by this personal property tax thing for a good many years. Number one, we would favor the exemption in item number E on your business inventories and supplies. We already have that in our Kenai Peninsula borough. Number two, we don't really see any need for the exemption for business equipment, machinery, under E.
Under F.
But we do see the need for the addition to item number G, which starts at the but and goes, but not used for commercial purposes. And that's under G. Number three, we are concerned that commercial fishing boats up to that limit on real residential property, perhaps maybe a $100,000, could be exempted either by dollar value amount or by the tonnage of the boats. And we don't have any solution there, but we suggest you might work on that. We would like to give some relief to our commercial fishermen. That's about all of our testimony, I guess.
Ms. Davis, in the Title 29 revision, there is an allowance for municipalities to tax boats on a tonnage basis. If that passes, and I understand it's going to be calendared for Thursday, in the Senate, then you would have, as a local government, have the option of taking boats and taxing them on tonnage as opposed to real and true value. Right now you have that option, but the option is a maximum of $5 for one size boat and $15 for the other. So while I appreciate what you're saying, whether this bill passes or it doesn't, you're going to have an option to look at the fishing vessel.
What would be the new limits under Title 29 that they're thinking about now?
On the vessels?
Mm-hmm.
That would be up to you. You could set a dollar figure.
Oh, I see.
If you wanted to tax a certain size fishing boat over 5,000 tons,
just being unlimited,
at X dollars, that's what you would set it at.
Okay.
Any questions?
Ms. Chairman? Yes, Ms. Davis, I, very frankly, have some pretty strong philosophical problems with this bill, and certainly willing, however, to work on it. But it seems to me that it's really an anti-small business, anti-business bill. Some of those areas that are fortunate, as is your borough, to have rather substantial oil development and facilities there, can pretty much lay it all on one particular taxpayer, and then you don't have your public, in a sense, really tied into having to watch what, say, you, and I was a local elected official before I came here, is doing with the budget. I think there's a very direct reaction between the taxes we pay and perhaps our interest in government. And I have some real problems in laying it on business, we're not really here talking about the renter. I guess we're talking on the way this is designed on real property, so it's the homeowner that gets the benefit. But what about the businessman? What about the small businessman who's going to have to pay the same rate? You cannot differentiate between classes. Maybe that's okay if you put all the burden on, let's get Phillips and some of the big companies. But you've got a whole lot of little business people that are there. Why should they have to pay the burden for the services that many individual homes get, and they in a sense get a free ride? I don't understand that. Why is one class better than the other? Why do we stick it to business?
Well, personally, I'm a businessman,
mm-hmm.
And I can understand where you're coming from there in that comment.
Because mm-hmm. I'm a business person too, and I'm not so sure I want my company to have mm-hmm. to bear all of the burden of government when I've just got one voice there, and I'm going to put a whole bunch of people out of that voice.
We wouldn't. What we're looking at here, and what I think you're looking at here, is giving local governments the option to offer some tax relief. This bill obviously isn't addressing tax relief for businesses, and the way I see it, it also isn't addressing, at least in our borough, additional taxes for business. We're simply offering some tax relief for individual homeowners. And why shouldn't homeowners, of all the people that build business, the people that build Alaska, the people that make the economy, why shouldn't they be given some tax relief? And I think you're headed in the right direction here. But as far as giving relief to the businessmen, you're going to have to look at that in another area.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just one comment. I don't want to, you know, certainly get into debate. That's not appropriate. But I don't, what we're talking about is letting one class have a lower tax. We're not talking about lowering the overall. If one goes down, I assume one's going to go up, unless you follow through and somehow are magically able to cut down the total tax bite in the community. Somebody's going to pay it if the costs are there. And it's a shifting burden issue that bothers me. Not that I'm not sympathetic. I happen to have had a tremendous increase in the valuation of my own home. And I would just love not to pay any taxes, but I receive a whole lot. That's my government and my services. And I don't want to see my business pay for it where I'm not paying for it as a homeowner.
Okay, well, under this thing, you also want to remember, ma'am, that these businessmen, at least in our community, also have homes. They also live in this same community, and they would also be included in the tax relief on their homes. So we're not talking about business in this bill. We're talking about tax relief for all homeowners, and they're included, and they get the same tax relief as the other guys. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a list of people here that have signed up to testify, but they didn't say on which bill. So, Ted Burns, did you want to testify on this bill?
690, no.
Senator Kelly, you're on for 690. Paula McCarter, did you want to testify on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Paula McCarter, Director of Local Government Assistance Division, Community and Regional Affairs. Mr. Chairman, we have provided the committee with a brief position paper on this bill. Basically, the thrust of the bill is to indicate opposition to its passage by the department. This is consistent with the position we've taken over the years. We have also provided the committee with a fiscal note that to indicate that to the department there would be no direct cost for the administration of this bill. We do point out in the fiscal note and in our narrative that, of course, municipalities, if they opt to exercise the optional exemption, there would be additional costs to those. Obviously, they wouldn't pass the optional exemption unless they were willing to accept the additional administrative costs. We do point out in our paragraph 2 of the position paper that shifting of the tax burden away from the residential homeowner in those boroughs, and we presume only those oil-rich boroughs which currently have opted for the $10,000 exemption would consider opting for the higher $10,000 exemption, that shifting of tax burden from the residential owner onto commercial and industry in those oil and gas tax boroughs particularly will also reduce the amount of state collected oil and gas taxes as a result of that shift. With that, Mr. Chairman, I have no other testimony. We have not attempted to compute that reduction in state collected revenues.
That would be almost impossible to do. The only thing you could do would be to go to each municipality and say one mill shift would be so many dollars based on what the 20 mill ad valorem tax was.
That's correct.
I think you can fairly say, though, that it really only applies to two municipalities, possibly three. One municipality, being North Slope Borough, already has 20 mill tax on all that, and there's very little money that comes to the state under that 20 mill tax.
That's
under
not
the ad valorem tax.
No. It's not entirely correct. If you were to raise, for example, in the North Slope, the optional exemption from $10,000 to $50,000, the North Slope Borough, which currently levies about a 90 mill tax levy, would just levy a higher levy in order to generate.
That's what I said. They've already taken the 20 mills.
That's correct, but there would be additional revenues taken from the state collected oil and gas. Currently, the North Slope Borough effectively exceeds that 20 mil levy within its borough boundaries, and in fact, the revenues are coming from state taxation that's outside of the North Slope Borough presently.
Any questions? Was anyone else here that wished to testify on this bill? 421.
Drop it, I'll take a look. I can't see it.
Okay, there's... Okay, thank you, Roger. What we have is committee substitute. Not much was discussed about the personal property, and that basically goes back to our discussion that we had during the 29 hearings about moving to a classification process for personal property as opposed to final, or just as it reads now, is all or none. Could I have a motion to consider or adopt the Senate committee substitute in place of 421? You're not going to make it, she is going to make it.
I yield to my vote for language. Why don't you just say in the absence of objection, the chairman is going to adopt the substitute.
Any absence of objection. The next bill that we have consideration is... Senate Bill 690. Let me double check here. We did have Senate Bill 613 scheduled today, and that is sponsored by Senator Petula, and he had asked us to postpone Senate Bill 613. I don't even think it's in the packet. That he had asked us not to. Yes.
Fully by old friend 421. Didn't we talk to Representative Newland about how his bill had been changed and ascertain from him how he feels about the change?
The bill was given to Representative Malone. Yes, he did.
Say okay.
I think his statement was something about not the whole oath, but 500% better than what. Pardon? No, we have not adopted. We haven't had a motion to move it. Senate Bill 690. Senator Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to apologize. I didn't realize when I came in that the committee was actually in meeting. I thought you were waiting to start. Mr. Chairman, I prepared a text that I was going to give today under the circumstances, and knowing how busy you are, I'll skip through it rather briefly, but I would ask that it be entered into the record of the committee proceedings. Last session, the legislature adopted Senate Joint Resolution 19 creating a special committee on property taxation. One product of the committee was the introduction of SB 797, which I believe is pending in this committee. 797 would consolidate and streamline the present revenue sharing and municipal assistance programs in order to provide municipalities with the financial assistance necessary to hold the line on local property taxes. I believe it is an excellent bill, and at the appropriate time, I hope you'll give it serious consideration. This particular bill, Mr. Chairman, briefly, would allow homeowners, renters, and mobile home dwellers to file a return with the state and to receive a rebate or refundable credit for up to 50% of local property taxes paid on their principal place of residence. The maximum amount of credit that could be claimed would be limited to $300 for a married couple and or a person who paid all of the taxes or rent on their dwelling and $150 for persons who shared rent or property tax payments. For renters, including space rent for mobile homes, a tax equivalency formula would be used to estimate taxes paid through rent, and this formula would determine the allowable credit. I might add that this is essentially the same approach now used for the Senior Citizens Renters Tax Relief Program administered by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. To give you an example of how the program would work, a family in Anchorage paying taxes on a home valued at $100,000 would qualify for the maximum credit of $300. A family renting an apartment in the same location for $500 per month would qualify for approximately $240 in tax credit. The program is intended to be administered through the Department of Revenue in much the same way as the present tax credit for child care expenses and campaign contributions are now handled. I won't take a lot of your time, Mr. Chairman, other than to call your attention to a brief analysis of the bill, which I have attached to my prepared remarks and which I will leave for you. I'd just like to emphasize in conclusion that this is a very complex and difficult area to address. The bill before you represents my best efforts to design a program that is effective, fair to both owners and renters, and that is relatively simple to administer. I have no pride of authorship, and I encourage you to work on the bill to hopefully improve it. I do feel strongly that there should be a place in our many programs for assisting municipalities to provide some reasonable amount of direct property tax relief to individual Alaskans to use as they see fit. By providing these tax relief benefits directly to homeowners and renters, we give the individuals some choice on how to use these benefits, whether to ask their assemblies and councils for increased services and higher taxes, or whether to hold down government costs and enjoy reduced tax burdens. I'm not saying my bill should be the only or even the major form of local financial assistance, but I believe it could play a valuable part in such a program. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ted Burns is a former municipal counsel for the municipality of Anchorage. Is a consultant with the Property Taxation Committee. He's specifically consulting on SB 797, which is the revenue sharing bill that's in the committee, but he has been developing the concept on 690, and he is here for further testimony and any questions he might be able to answer.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thanks, Senator Kelly, and I appreciate a chance to read on your testimony, but would it be appropriate to ask Mr. Burns to go through the fiscal notes? I see we have a representative here from the Department of Revenue. I'm looking for the fiscal impact.
Yes, I'd sort of like to hear the rest of your testimony myself.
Fine, okay.
Mr. Burns.
You know the question.
Pardon me?
You know the question.
How much?
How much?
I'm not sure where you'd like me to begin. I could either outline some of the important points in the bill and then proceed into maybe a discussion of the fiscal note. I have just received and really haven't had a chance to go through in detail the fiscal note prepared by Revenue. I did have a chance to discuss it in Anchorage, preliminary fiscal note with Mr. Wall, and I think I understand it reasonably well. First, to maybe give some general comments about the program, as the Senator indicated, I don't think this is intended to be a substitute, certainly, for municipal assistance or revenue sharing or any of the other programs that go directly to municipalities. Rather, the thought is that perhaps there should be some portion of the overall package of tax relief benefits or municipal assistance benefits that maybe could be best given to directly to the individual, to allow that individual to decide whether he should go to his local assembly or council and say, we want more police protection, we want more fire protection, and we're willing to pay for it, or at the same time say, no, we want to hold down our costs and we want to enjoy directly the benefits of this tax rebate program. Although this is, I would say, a substantially different variation, it is not a radically new type of program. Some form of a tax credit type of program for principal place of abode exists in over half the states. I think something like about 28 states use it. A common version of this type of program is called a so-called circuit breaker concept, whereby once tax burdens rise to a certain level, state statute kicks in and provides tax relief, generally according to income in many places, to mitigate the effects of what are deemed to be excessive tax burdens. This bill does something along those lines, by basically ensuring some tax relief up to a given level. And I think that's another point that I think is significant in the bill. It does not take away the fiscal accountability between the residential taxpayer and their local government. Only 50% of property taxes levied qualify for the relief. Above that, the dollar limit is $300. So we don't have a situation in which people will no longer have any incentive to control the local budget. Quite the contrary, for every dollar that the local assembly or city council votes to spend, at least 50% of that is going to have to still be picked up by the homeowner or renter through their rent. So, again, it's not intended to be a total relief package, but one that provides some supplemental assistance. I won't go into detail of the analysis that is attached to Senator Kelly's testimony, other than to indicate that using Anchorage as an example, I think the average statewide levy is somewhere around 7.5 or 8 mils, if I recall some figures I saw from CNRA, using that sort of average, most people on homes in the $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 range and rents in the $500 a month or so range would qualify for the maximum, the $300 or $150 maximum rebate payment. By placing the administration of the program within Title 43 in the Department of Revenue, it was hoped to achieve some economies of scale. As you know, there is now two existing tax credit programs that have been ongoing for some time, one for child care expenses and one for political campaign contributions. To a certain extent, the administrative mechanism is in place. Of course, there may be a third coming down the line in the form of a permanent fund dividend distribution program. And Mr. Wall or someone from Revenue, I'm sure, can speak better to this, but it was hoped that maybe by placing all of these programs within the same department, one could achieve some economies of scale for administrative purposes. I think with that, unless you have some specific questions about the functioning of the bill, how it would work, I could try to address the fiscal note briefly if you'd like to.
Yes, please do. Now, when you say the fiscal note,
something
like five fiscal notes or four, three or four, and I two have just received that information, and I'm not sure exactly. Let's take the first one first.
Okay, well, I think
hope we all have the first one.
What is it?
I've got a fiscal note from Department of Revenue Collection Management Enforcement Division.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there appear to be three separate fiscal notes. There are four fiscal notes. Three of them deal with administrative costs to the department, and those are thousands. Those figures are in thousands. The last one in my package, which is just entitled Senate Bill 690 and shows in the middle of the page 30.1, is in millions. That is the funding fiscal note for what the rebate would cost, and that is the substantial cost of the program. I would prefer to really address that one, since that's the one I've done some research on, and the department is probably best able to speak to its own internal costs of administering the program.
I haven't found it yet.
Yeah.
I think it's the very last one on my package.
Easily mistake 30,000 for 30 million.
No, the last one of mine doesn't say 30,000.
No, it's not.
I've got it.
Yeah, do you want this?
Found it.
Here we go. Thanks, sir.
I had an opportunity to, as you'll know, just the projected FY83 funding requirement to pay the refundable credit statewide is estimated to be $30.1 million. This is a very difficult thing to cost out. It has lots and lots of variables associated with it. Vacancy rates affect it, residential construction rates, population increases, tax rates, a number of things. Interestingly enough, I researched and did and worked up a rough fiscal note using one concept and one approach. I in fact did that using two different approaches. Revenue did it using a third approach. Two of ours agreed quite closely, having been done independently. My third one was substantially lower than this. I'll let Revenue maybe comment on their approach. One of the things I did was to use 1980 census data on housing units, on residential housing units, both apartments and homes, statewide. And I treated all units as though they were occupied, so that although there may have been a little bit of increase in population, I think the number is probably still fairly good. I used all units as being occupied around the state and assumed that every one of them would qualify for the maximum $300 credit. And I came up with a number quite close to this one, very close to 30.1. I would hope that that number is high, and that the actual impact, realizing number one, that there will be vacancy around the state, number two, that in many places around the state, the tax rates will not be such to bump it up to the maximum allowable, thirdly, that a lot of people, the experience has shown, just simply will not file and will not claim for one reason or another. Revenue approached it using, from a population standpoint, in terms of the number of claims to be anticipated, and came up, as you see, with this number that's very close to mine. However, a third approach that I think is worth considering is to simply look roughly at what the total amount of residential property tax revenues received by municipalities were last year. That number was something I think CNRA indicated around $49 million, $49 or $50 million. In theory, since this bill cannot ever return more than half of that, the absolute upper max ought to be about 24. And assuming, again, some of these other qualifying factors, it should be below that. So what I'm saying is I personally believe this number to be high, if anything, and that the actual number to be somewhere below that, perhaps in the range of 20 to 24.
Having lived through just barely the revenue sharing bill, when we had sheafs and sheafs of computer runs and midnight computer runs and all kinds of computer runs, and everybody was very worried to find out where they were and how their area benefited and so on, and the complexity of the tax bill where you get credit for a number of different kinds of taxes. Have you done any estimating along with your fiscal notes as to who benefits by this approach and who doesn't, and what we're looking at in terms of, you know, Anchorage, Alaska is going to do fine because we have no sales tax, but what about the equity question with the area that, for instance, doesn't have any, their land's been tied up so they don't have property tax, they use sales tax or some other form?
This is very clearly a supplemental program that is aimed at property tax relief, not sales tax relief. For places that generate large amounts of their income through sales tax and have very low property tax rates, they would get a relatively smaller proportion of the total pie.
Do some places do it on the basis of sales tax? Is there an equity formula?
There are not a great deal. I believe the city of Fairbanks, perhaps, has relied traditionally on sales tax. Second-class cities are limited by law to 5 mills.
Mm-hmm.
The theory being, of course, that what are you doing are rebating money that people have paid. So if they have not paid a great deal in sales tax, they should not be entitled to a great deal of rebate back. I will back up just a second and stress the benefit of this program to renters. It is probably the, based on my research, perhaps the only workable type of tax, statewide tax relief program that I can see doing equity to the renters in the state.
Mm-hmm.
They have traditionally been ignored and left out, not intentionally, but out of necessity perhaps, from the revenue sharing, municipal assistance, direct financial assistance to local government type of program. As we all know, rents are controlled largely by market forces, of which taxes are only one small part, and the fact that the landlord may receive indeed some tax benefits from, let's say, revenue sharing, just unfortunately has never traditionally been translated down into a break for the renter. This bill would put the renter on pretty much an equal footing with the homeowner, and the same would be the case for mobile home dwellers. They would at least be assured of some direct tax relief benefits coming out of their share of the state's revenues.
Mr. Byrne, one thing that nobody has drawn me a picture yet on this one, and I'm having difficulty reconciling whether, and we'll say your $30 million is spent. Is that to be deducted from municipal assistance fund, added on top of the municipal assistance fund? I mean, what's the mix here? Are we still talking about 86 million, whatever it amounts to, for municipal assistance, and then they having a tax rate, and then the taxpayer applies for a rebate on what the tax rate is?
I can't give you my recommendation on that. The bill is designed to be independent of those two other programs. The funding level for those two other programs would be totally separate. That would be a decision of the legislature as to whether they wanted to basically offset this amount from amounts appropriated directly to municipalities. One thing to keep in mind, however, is that to the extent that more revenues are given directly to local government, and if those revenues are used to reduce taxes, then the fiscal note on this program goes down accordingly. If municipalities take the money they get from revenue sharing and municipal assistance and do what indeed they've been told to do for the last 5 or 6 years at least, and hold down taxes, that translates into lower costs for this program, because obviously if people are not paying that great an amount in local taxes, they will not receive, be entitled to as great a rebate back. So they're related in that sense, but it was not my intent to try to tie those together in any legal way.
Obviously, I don't want to use the term double dip, but it is. We were talking a while ago about an anti-business bill, and it seems to me like that we have, in everything we're doing, we're zeroing in on the individual or resident, and not maybe addressing the old issue. But I realize that this particular bill is here for an equity resolution, as much as anything, mm-hmm. for the renter. I don't disagree with that. The question that's come to my mind also is your testimony to what happens if the tax credit system is repealed? I understand that that was on the floor of the House yesterday. It passed and was reconsidered, where the $100, what's the repeal? Does that shoot this thing out of the water?
No, it just simply uses that section of Title 43. This program can stand or fall on its own. As I say, there is some degree of administrative efficiency achieved if those are done all at the same time. If the other two go away and are repealed, this would simply remain and be operated the same way that the old programs used to be.
Yeah,
operated.
But wouldn't then a full fiscal, the fiscal note have to change? Maybe I'm asking the wrong person. I probably should be asking that.
Yeah,
the Department of Administration.
I got the impression it would change, but not dramatically. You're talking about the difference in cost of administration, and that in terms of the overall cost of the bill would be reasonably small.
Any other questions of Mr. Burney?
I just note, maybe in conclusion, if I could, that one of the goals in trying to research this problem was to try to keep things simple. If there's a tendency I researched the laws in many, many other states, and one of the things that comes across very clearly is that there's a danger in getting that. Something which becomes a Frankenstein's monster and becomes incredibly cumbersome to administer. I think one of the benefits of the bill is that it is straightforward, fairly simple. It would rely in large part on voluntary compliance by the taxpayer, and would not involve to any onerous extent local assessors or local governments and put extreme administrative burdens on their shoulders. It was designed to be fairly simple to administer, such as I think the child care and political contribution credit is reasonably simple to administer.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, let me make one further comment. If I was certain that the additional revenue sharing that we were going to be sending back to the municipality was in fact going to be used for property tax relief in the future, then there's probably not a whole lot of reason for this bill other than it's given equity to the renters and mobile home dwellers. But other than that, we can't be certain, and I am not certain, that the increased revenues that we are going to give to the municipalities are in fact going to continue to be used for property tax relief. Now, we were very successful last year, but then let's face it, we had $5.7 billion last year to appropriate, and everybody got pretty much what they wanted. And now we're down to it. We're looking at 2.5, 2.8, 1.9. Yet. Who knows what next year's revenues are going to be? Who knows if we can continue to fund municipal revenue assistance at the levels that is going to allow the local governments to expand their governments and at the same time provide property tax relief? We simply don't know that. So this is simply a safety mechanism from my point of view that is going to make certain that property tax relief is afforded to those people that are paying. And if we continue to fund at the levels we have funded in the past, and the municipalities continue to move to property tax relief, I'm not terribly concerned about this problem. But what I foresee happening is that once, I don't foresee that local municipalities this next fiscal year putting the kind of property tax relief in effect that we saw last year. Because I think there was a real emphasis out there, a real pressure towards property tax relief. And I think the municipal governments, to a large extent, have released that pressure with the decreases they gave last year. And I fear that what they might do now is use this next round of increased budget to expand their local government. And then they're going to get in the same situation we are. Let's face it, in democracies, expenditures rise to meet the revenues available. The more revenues local governments have, the more expansion they're going to have too. You're going to find the same situation the local government has at the state level, in that a year from now, every assembly out there is going to have increased staffing. I know some of the people are already talking about increased staffing. That's just an indication. you're going to see tremendous expansion in local government. I believe starting this year, and I want to make certain that the additional revenues we give are related are diverted into local property tax base rather than simply local government expansion. If they can do both, fine. You know, I want to make sure at least something is being done in this area, and that it's not just sort of shunted aside.
Maybe
still I don't know that I got the answer to my question. The question was, where is the $30 million coming from? Is it on top of the municipal assistance,
yes,
or is it out of the municipal assistance?
I think the answer to that is that's really a decision that it could come from both. Part could be offset, part could be funded as an addition. All could be treated as an offset. In theory, you could take the entire package for revenue sharing municipal assistance and offset the estimated cost of this program. You could offset 50% of any percentage of it that the legislature desired.
Mr. Chairman, let's work through that. Sometimes I have trouble seeing things. Let's use some numbers. We've got $50 million revenue sharing, we've got $50 million municipal assistance.
Let's raise it.
Well, no, but let's play numbers. And we're going to give, out of that $100 million, there's going to be a $20 million fiscal note with this. Now, what are you saying to me? How are we going to work that? We're going to have those people out there. It's going to account to $20 million. What's going to happen with this, the way this bill is written?
There's a number. Well, the way this bill is written, it will not affect that at all.
It's going to be $120 million.
If you fund, if you made the decision to fund both programs to their maximum level.
Okay. Yeah. But let's think a minute. Let's say we decide that we're going to put $20 million into this program, the way it's written, and we're going to fund the other $80 million. Well, then what we've really done is to determine probably the size of the budget, which is probably going to be less because the municipality is going to get $20 million less, so they're going to shrink their budget theoretically, or maybe they're going to increase their taxes. I don't know which. I'm just trying to get a picture of how that
you can
work.
View this in essentially two ways. One, as a way of steering some of the present municipal aid money away from control by municipalities and putting it directly in the hands of individual taxpayers, or you can view it as a supplemental program to add additional tax relief dollars into the pot and to give those additional dollars directly to individuals rather than to increase the amount that is going through revenue sharing and municipal assistance and what have you. I would note, going back to your question, Senator, on the prior bill, that one thing that this type of approach avoids is shifting the burden from residents to business, such as an exemption approach.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to make that point. I mean, it's there. You're getting an added advantage as of there, but you're at least avoiding the problem of having a differential amount of tax.
You're not transferring that property tax burden onto another class.
It does have, you know, I appreciate that.
Thank you, Ted. I don't have people signed up for this one. I don't know who else is here to testify. I think Mr. Wall.
Mr. Chairman, I'm available for questions if you.
Mm-hmm. If you could, I'd like to ask some questions about this. I'm assuming this is. Identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Phil Wall, the Director of Public Services for the Department of Revenue.
I've got two or three fiscal notes here. One is written 3282. Another one is written 22682. The one we were just talking about, I think that one.
2982. That's not Mr. Wall.
12882. And then there's another one in the back, and it's 3282. And your signature is on one, and Ms. Dimmer is on another. And they're both written on the same day, and they're different. Now, are we talking about the same program, or?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to try to explain that.
Okay.
Senate Bill 690, as it's presently written, would affect three divisions within the Department of Revenue: the Enforcement Division, the Administrative Services Division, and the Public Services Division. So there. tax relief, and that the primary purpose of that compliance would be to determine the legality and perhaps even the reasonableness of the claim, particularly as we looked at individual pieces of property and saw multiple claims made against a single piece of property and other inconsistencies of that type. There would also, there was also a vision that there would be a sampling or let me call it a sampling program that would be used to select certain applications and check their legality. This is a normal procedure in the Department of. And so, fiscal.
So note, you have to add them all up?
So I let the computer do that, sir. But we do check certain ones to make sure that the things that are claimed on the form.
No, I'm talking about the three fiscal
notes.
Yes, sir. You have to add the three fiscal notes up, and that comes out to my ballpark addition of $685,000.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Okay, now this is in addition to any. Let me go back and ask the question again now that I think I asked a while ago about administrative services. There's a certain amount of administration cost that's involved with the tax credit, the old tax credit system.
Yes, sir.
And this is in addition to those.
Yes, sir. We've assumed that we would be able to provide the supervision needed to do this job, and certain support such as personnel services and the like. But with the advent of tax repeal and its effect on the department and the unknown status of the permanent fund dividend, not knowing whether that resource will be there or not, this fiscal note has been prepared as if this were a brand new program with no other resources in place. Now, there are certain resources that are there that we have not put in the fiscal note, like computer terminals. The computer terminals are indeed in place. They are not, again, duplicated in this fiscal note and things of that nature.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify, Palmer?
Mr. Chairman?
Palmer and Carter, Community and Regional Affairs. Even though the department is testifying in opposition to the bill, I would like to acknowledge for the record that Senator Kelly and his interim committee, and particularly Ted Byrne, who served as consultant to the committee, did work very closely with the department so that if the legislation were to pass, it has incorporated certainly all of the concerns that the department has raised from the mechanical drafting viewpoint of the bill. Mr. Chairman, we have presented to the committee a position paper. There is no fiscal impact to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. That has been presented to you already by the Department of Revenue. Our position paper is basically indicates that we are opposed to the bill more from a philosophical standpoint than anything else. Our feeling is, based on what we saw with the passage of Senate Bill 125 last year, the supplemental, that money was in fact used by local governments to significantly reduce the local tax burden on the citizenry within the community. The concern we also have is that this approach, and Senator Sturgalewski raised it and we didn't comment specifically on it, does tend to recognize only 32 taxing jurisdictions through the state out of 151 municipalities. There are only 32 that actually use the property tax as a vehicle to generate local revenues. The majority of communities in the state use a sales tax vehicle for generating of local revenues. This bill in no way would reward those communities or the citizenry within those communities. And from that viewpoint, we view it as having inequity from a statewide perspective. Finally, Mr. Chairman, we see that there are other mechanisms or other vehicles by which local property tax relief can be given to those who pay both property and sales tax through legislation that's before you, particularly the legislation that would provide 100% funding for the foundation program and 100% funding for the school aid to construction. In those communities that do levy property taxes, in every instance, over half of the property tax levy is directed towards education. And if those other bills were to pass that are currently before you, we think that that direct reduction of the school tax levy would provide more than adequate tax relief for the citizenry that's required to pay those kinds of taxes. Mr. Chairman, I believe with that, I'd just be available to answer questions. Again, it's a philosophical approach. We feel there's that if there is demand for tax relief, that the citizenry of a local municipality can work within its city council or within its borough to force that borough to provide whatever tax relief that the local municipality can provide. If the municipalities cannot provide more, then perhaps there ought to be a look at increasing other state aid formulas, such as the municipal revenue sharing or the municipal assistance programs, to permit those municipalities throughout the state to pass on tax relief to their municipalities, be it sales or property tax. One comment I would make in closing, in the argument or in the discussion that was had on if you were to reduce either municipal revenue sharing or the municipal assistance program appropriations by an amount, for example, $20 million to fund this program, the effect would be that reduction would be passed on to the local municipalities in terms of the amount of revenue they receive from the state, assume $20 million. The municipality, unless it's somehow able to reduce its level of operation, and we don't feel that it could, would necessarily need to increase its overall tax rate by 20%, which in that case would shift that tax burden to everybody within the community. The beneficiaries of this program are only the homeowners and renters, as was pointed out, so there would be an increase in tax to the commercial establishments, for example, that would not benefit from this particular piece of legislation. The point I'm making, Mr. Chairman, is we would encourage that if this legislation were to pass, that neither the municipal revenue sharing or the municipal assistance program, which in the governor's budget doesn't even keep up with municipal government inflation at the current level proposed by the governor, and any reduction of either one of those funds to help fund this program would necessarily be a reduction to the local governments forcing an increase in taxes, as I view it.
I think that's a reasonable comment.
Thank you, Mom. Anyone else who was testifying 6-9?
Senator, yes. Mr. Chairman, just one question if I could, if Marilyn Miller, last Municipal League. Did the last, has the Legislative Council of the Municipal League gotten into, or is there any policy statement regarding a look at the overall taxing picture on municipalities? Has there been any interest in
blue ribbon approach to taking a look at municipal taxes or not? There's been some discussion, but there's nothing in the policy statement. I understand that Jenny Tiburu addressed that before this meeting next week. Oh, was that right? Was that? She's indicated that Jenny would be discussing that issue with us next week, that on a possible overall approach to taking a look at municipal taxes.
Is that what you said?
Yes, Jenny talked to me about this approach just before she went to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I had a call from her just before I came up to this committee and asked her again about it and if I was supposed to bring it up or anything. She said no, that it was just in conversation form at the present that she would be addressing it.
Fine, thank you.
Here we have now Senate Bill 147. Senator Bradley?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Municipal Affairs Committee. Mr. Chairman, this bill provides that only one contiguous plot of real estate owned and occupied by a permanent, as a permanent place of abode, is exempt from its assessed value of taxation. The tax exemption applies only to one, an Alaskan resident 65 years of age or older, and only 30 years in the state is all required, for the entire assessed value of the aforementioned real property, and this is already in effect, as you know. No other parameters. Two, and this is added, a honorably discharged veteran, disabled veteran, for only a percentage of the assessed value of the real property, which is the same as his or her percentage of service-connected disability rate. If two or more eligible persons own the real property, only one of them can receive the benefit of the tax exemption. So they will have to decide between them who is to receive it. And divide our profits later. Section 2 of page 2 of the bill describes application procedures. An application must be made annually. First, I'm to the senior citizen program we currently have in effect. Real property in this bill includes mobile homes, whether classified as real or personal property by the municipality otherwise, as well as, of course, permanent home structures and contiguous land. It does not include land that's down the road a piece, not contiguous. If you have 40 acres down the road, it doesn't include it. Mr. Chairman, I would like the Community and Regional Affairs representative present to explain the fiscal note. The fiscal note includes the senior citizens who already received the tax reductions caused by Chapter 6 SLA 1981, which makes it look more expensive than it really should be by adding disabled veterans. And with six or more state employees per capita and the highest paid in the nation, I don't believe the CNRA department needs any more personnel to process just 2,100 more applications. And I recommend that we reduce the fiscal note. And the department, in their position paper, does not approve this bill, although it has approved it for senior citizens in the past, and with only 30 days, as I said. In fact, you can be a deserter, a draft evader, or even a criminal. You've got 65 years behind you and a resident of the state, you can collect it. So I certainly think that in this instance, somebody that has a service-connected disability should also receive such a reduction. And Mr. Chairman, this concludes my briefing. If there are any questions, I'll be glad to answer all that I can.
Mr. Chairman, just so I understand this, am I correct that this bill would only add disabled veterans as to the percentage of disability by their service disability rating? Is that correct?
That's right. Honorably discharged and service connected only.
And there are, how accurate is that? I guess I'm surprised that there's as many as 2,100 in the state.
Well, some of them are rather low. I have 30%.
I see.
A fair number have are 10%.
There's somewhere. There's about 500, 15% or more.
515 it was in the... And one,
oh, I see. Here we are.
One bill, not this one, but another one. This is a little contradictory to another bill we had fairly recently, too. 100%, we only had 51. This says 80. I don't know where to get these statistics, but all you have to do is call the Veterans Affairs headquarters in Anchorage, and they can get them for you. But I noticed that discrepancy. I don't know how the difference came unless it was a typographical error.
Mr. Chairman? Again, just for information, the senior citizen program has a rental provision. Does this include the rental?
No, that's an addition. Sounds ridiculous. That's an addition to this, but not included.
You did not include that?
No. It's not in the fiscal note. Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to tell on those, is there any way to tell among those disabled people the percentage that are renters as opposed to homeowners?
I guess it could be ascertained, Mr. Chairman, to the chair, to Senator Strugalewski, but I don't know what it is.
I think they've tried.
A lot of these, incidentally, Mr. Chairman, a lot of these that are 65 years of age would get it under the 65-year age, and they wouldn't have to get it under this program at all. So it could be reduced by that number, which I don't think has been taken into consideration.
Mr. Chairman, it might be helpful to get some breakdown on the fiscal note, wouldn't it?
I think they've attempted to give that to us, and I really don't think there's any way to know until it goes into effect.
No, but isn't it, we already have the... I think Senator Bradley's correct. Of course, we already have the senior citizen tax relief, and is that back before us along with the veterans? In other words, a portion of it's already, am I correct? It's already,
yes.
You know, it's already
That's
going
right.
out, and I don't know whether
it's true. It makes it look bigger than it is.
Indicated.
It includes what we've already passed for the senior citizen, 65 years of age, and the residents.
I don't know if that's correct or not, but if it's correct, it does.
Right.
One other thing, Mr. Chairman, if I may. And two bills we got through the House State Affairs committee fairly recently. We approved it, but we approved the fiscal note with a reduction to the personnel that we're at, which is 10,000 here. That's not up to the committee.
As I read the analysis and the position paper by the department and Senator, I maybe I have any other questions in this report. I believe they've tried to address it by simply saying that in the applications they received from senior citizens, 82% of them own their own home. And if you use that assumption, then with disabled veteran, then you would get some feeling for how many might be. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Palmer, is there anyone else besides you? Is there anyone else here who wishes to speak on this? Palmer?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The department has presented you with the position paper and fiscal note. We indicate that we do not support this type of legislation, and I'd like to indicate, certainly in the presence of Senator Bradley, that this in no way indicates any notion of the department of being anti-veterans. Our position, Mr. Chairman, and it has consistently been, and even when senior citizen legislation was before the legislature, is that we believe that the state, if it's to provide tax relief, should provide that relief to people who need relief for economic reasons, not based on their status as a member of a certain organization or position in life or a certain age bracket. We found, certainly with the senior citizen program, and we brought it to the legislature before and have testified against the current senior citizen legislation program, that even though there are a large number of senior citizens who are deserving probably of aid from the state to meet their tax or rent payments because of living on fixed incomes, and that situation certainly exists within the group of veterans that are in the state that may, for reasons of being unable to obtain adequate jobs, may need that tax relief too. But to, as a class, provide a blanket exemption to either senior citizens or veterans or widows or whatever class of people, we feel that that is inappropriate of the state to provide blanket exemptions and for the state to pick up the entire cost of property tax, regardless of the ability of the particular person in the class to pay. We have very wealthy senior citizens. We have reasonably wealthy veterans, I'm sure, who aren't necessarily in need of tax relief, but by virtue of enactment of this type of legislation would get it, not because of their need for relief, but because they're a member of a certain category of citizen. With respect to the concern about the fiscal note, first I'll indicate that our fiscal note indicates that to process the 2,100 additional applications that we anticipate would be forthcoming from the some 3,000 veterans that are within the state, we're asking for the addition of a half-time clerk typist too, which I don't feel is an inordinate amount of administration to administer and to process, particularly in the beginning with the new program and new applications, et cetera, 2,100 applications. So we couch a lot of our analysis, and the bill itself, by the way, does not change in any way, as far as I know, the current senior citizen program. It adds in, and for continuity's sake, it adds in appropriately language for veterans where it should be added, but it in no way changes the current senior citizen property exemption program. It just rewrites it as it currently exists. So there is no change in the senior program. In terms of comparative purposes, because we don't know how many veterans own their home or rent, we don't know how many would apply. We weren't sure, although we have tried in our chart on page 3 of our analysis to indicate in terms of a total fiscal cost to the state. And we got this from the Department of Labor and from the Veterans Administration. The number of veterans and the number that are in each of the 10% increment levels of disability. in doing that, we made some comparisons with the senior citizen program. But again, this program in no way changes, increases, or diminishes the current senior citizen program. All the numbers we use, or statistics we use, were based on our experience with administering of the senior citizen exemption program.
Mr. Chairman, although I don't think it was said directly, but to speak to Senator Bradley's question, the $308,000 that it shows as additional for the current fiscal year is strictly the addition of veterans. It has nothing to do with the senior citizens'
That's correct.
Tax exemption.
That's the amount that would go
so
to veterans.
So it is an accurate fiscal note then.
That would be what would be reimbursed to municipalities.
Correct. And I
what is senior citizens about $4 million, right?
No, Mr. Chairman, I believe senior citizens is approximately $2 million, and in fact that has gone down because of the reduction of local property tax.
But so you saved some money. What'd you do with it?
It's reflected in the governor's budget, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions? We'll stand adjourned.
I am so sorry. I didn't know. I thought you were handing me something.